The Queen Needs a Nurse. Tape Me Up on Insights in Nursing. Well, good day and welcome to another episode of Insights in Nursing. I'm your host, Jamie Davis from The Nursing Show, and we've got a great panel again today as we pick up with our new season. And we've got two of our other returning panelists coming back to join us. I'm joined by Teresa Heithouse. You might know her as Nurse Educator on Twitter or the author at nursinglogic.com and owner of that site and business. Teresa, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really going to enjoy today's conversation.
I think so, too. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're also joined by Lori Schoenle. You can find Lori online as well under Lori Schoenle on Twitter. And she also is over at correctionalnurse.net. Hi, Lori.
Well, hi, Jamie. Great to be here.
It's great to be here. And you and I actually got to catch up in person a week or so ago for lunch. So that was kind of fun. But usually we talk to each other just over the Skype line.
That's very true. And if I remember, we had lunch at the Cheesecake Factory and neither of us had cheesecake. Is that amazing or what?
You know, it just is the way it worked out, I guess. We talked the whole time. Whenever I have a lunch like that, I never finish my food anyway. So you wouldn't know that from looking at me, but yes.
Wait, I have to know, how did the two of you get together for lunch?
Well, Lori has a family in the area and was visiting, and I live in Maryland near Delaware, so we were able to connect up at a restaurant midway between us. It was kind of nice.
That's great.
Yeah.
It was great to have an IRL experience when mostly we're out in the social networking world.
Yeah, in the real world, right? That's definitely true.
That's real life. Yep.
Real life, yep.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to meet with Terry Schmidt, Carol Eldridge, as well as Rob Frazier over at the Sigma Theta Tau International Biennial last year. And I had to say, it was just wonderful to finally see somebody in real life rather than all the time over the network.
It really is a lot of fun. And I'm actually already looking forward to the next event at Blog World, which is now called TMX, NMX, the New Media Expo, but it's continuation of Blog World, and there's going to be hopefully, you know, we're looking at another social media track again for social health, and so I'm looking forward to maybe seeing some of the other nurse bloggers and social media nursing folks at that as well. And anyone who's listening, it's open to everyone, so you can go to blogworld.com and find out all the information on that. It's coming up in January in Vegas, so should be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad they kind of put it back in Vegas. They had split it into two different events for a while, and they brought it back together to a single event next year, so I'm looking forward to that.
Let's do it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That'll be exciting. So let's kick off our first story here. And Lori, you had jumped right in when we first got the call opened up and talked about the stories we're going to look at today. Looking at the nurse in Yuma, Arizona, who was fired for posting a comment about a fatality in a motor vehicle accident on a local newspaper site. I doesn't really say a whole lot about how they identified that she was a nurse in the ER and had been involved with this patient care. But boy, this is just exactly what every administrator fears about social media and healthcare.
That's really true. This is such a distressing story. And, you know, it just grips your heart just from all angles, really. And so what a wonderful discussion item and maybe teaching tool for all of us as healthcare providers who, you know, are also very active in the social media space. We can sometimes lose perspective, I think. And I think that's what this nurse did in making a comment about a traffic fatality and the faultedness, whose fault it was, and making comments that certainly didn't come across as caring, or necessarily, presenting a professional nursing perspective to the world. And there was a great firestorm of a response from this nurse's response to a traffic fatality at a motorcycle accident. And the conclusion was that the hospital that she worked at discharged her. She's no longer working there.
Well, and it's, I mean, Teresa, it's clearly a breach of confidentiality. This is somebody involved in the care of this patient, or at least involved in the chain of care and in some way. And to make a comment about the legality, you know, a nurse making a comment about the legality of who was at fault in a traffic accident in a public forum like that, after being involved in the treatment of one of the patients from that accident, seems just very foolish.
Right. Well, actually, I have the quote here, if I could read it, which I thought was very distressing. What was in the article said that, quote, "If the ambulance was on a run and had lights or a siren on, the cyclist was wrong, period, in caps. If he died, aw, but sorry, his fault, in caps." She wrote, "As an ER nurse who sees people regularly, in caps, not to get out of the way of an ambulance, cops, firemen, got no pity for anyone who hit by anyone above. Pay attention and get out of the way." I had to say I was stunned when I read that. I was like, and to put it out on social media, I felt was somewhat callous, and I think also not thinking about what the repercussions of such writing could bring upon themselves.
And also not true. I mean, this is a common misconception, but ambulances and other emergency vehicles running lights and sirens are supposed to obey all traffic laws. Basically, they're to come to stops at intersections, and they're to obey a red light and only use their lights to then go through the intersection after they've made sure everyone has stopped. Now, not saying everybody does this, and this is a common problem in emergency services, but you know, I put my paramedic hat on here and I just cringe, because this is not what it's meant to be. I mean, we'd like the lights and sirens to alert people to our presence, but we drivers of emergency vehicles are supposed to drive with what is called due regard to the traffic around them, which means we don't have an ultimate right of way.
Well, right. And so her statement is false. And you also think, to what purpose was the statement made? I mean, it's a real breach of public etiquette and politeness to, you know, make a comment such as this that doesn't, you know, it is not for anyone's good to have this information. I mean, so the motorcyclist was at fault. How does that help the family who's grieving at his death, if in fact he even was at fault? And what benefit is to have that information out there? The only benefit seems to be, you know, meanness. And again, that's definitely not professional.
Right. I think another thing, too, that kind of stuck out to me in the article was that the emergency had been called off and the ambulance was making a U-turn when the motorcyclist rammed into the vehicle. So I said, wow, they weren't even on an emergency call at that point of doing the U-turn. So, and again, then followed up by this kind of a statement as you have a grieving family, I found was absolutely awful. I think that from this article, when I was reading down and I scanned down to the comments, they actually had the family member of the cyclist who said that she hadn't even been aware of these comments had it not been for this article.
Well, and but it brings up, you know, I've seen so many knee-jerk reactions to situations like this when organizations put together a social media policy because they're just so afraid of what can happen. But this type of speech, and I'm going to call it speech because that's what it is. It's a communication in a public forum. This type of speech is happening in other places. You know, unfortunately, there are people who are healthcare professionals that make comments like this in public places all the time with their voices. It just doesn't get as broadly broadcast. It's just in that local area, but it happens. And the educational point here is that using social media responsibly is just like must be done under the same rules as using any kind of communication responsibly for a healthcare professional.
Yeah,
I agree with you. on that point. I'm sorry, Laurie, go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing as well. In fact, I don't know if you folks came across our fellow blogger, the Nerdy Nurse, but she had a blog post about this this article as well. And she says, "Nurses, I beg you, if you ever get tempted to make remarks like this related to the death of someone online, please stop. If you feel that you simply must get it off your chest, tell a friend, tell your spouse, tell me. I'd much rather that you keep these comments offline to preserve the feelings of the family that are affected and to save your livelihood." And then just a lower comment, I really agree with this, "making negative and unprofessional statements online while referencing the fact that you are a nurse does just as much damage to the profession." She's referring to some other damage comments up there. So we have to be concerned, again, with our public speech for our own individual livelihood and correct ethical behavior, but also for our profession and how we represent nursing to the world.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you on that point as well.
Yeah, I think Brittany did a really good job of making that comment. And you know, it's I share this nurse's frustration because it becomes very frustrating for people involved in emergency care to see preventable things kill people and cause horrible injury. And it can become very difficult to keep your mouth shut when someone is injured, what you would say is needlessly. I'm not a big fan of motorcycles at all. And I could go off on a whole tirade of, it's not if you're going to have an accident, it's when you're going to have an accident. It may or may not be your fault, but you will lose. But that's just my perspective from seeing far too many motorcycle accidents up close and personal.
Sure.
I think that this nurse is expressing frustration that a lot of nurses in that career path feel, but she let it out in the wrong place. As Brittany points out, tell somebody if you have to, but don't put it in a public forum.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because another nurse was actually disciplined or had a discipline stand. In another article we have here from California, the Supreme Court allowed a nurse's probation after being caught drunk driving to stand. And, so this kind of nurse conduct, we talked about speech and confidentiality and talking about a patient care situation, but this also could extend to our personal lives outside of the hospital. Is this fair?
Well, I thought this was rather interesting because I actually had to look up, I'm from New York, I had to look up what would be the perspective here. I mean, does our personal life integrate with our professional life or our employment? And I actually also went to the ANA Code of Ethics. And if we go on to Provision 5, the Code of Ethics, part of it says that the nurse owes the same duties to self and others, including the responsibility to preserve integrity and safety, to maintain competence and continue personal and professional growth. Beyond that, in Section 5.3, discuss wholeness of character. And of course, now I'm trying to click on it and it's not moving over to me. So let me see if I can get over into that page. In wholeness of character, in the very first paragraph, it says nurses have both a personal and professional identities that are neither entirely separate nor entirely merged, but are integrated. In the process of becoming a professional, the nurse embraces the values of the profession, integrating them with personal values. Duties to self involve authentic expression of one's own moral point of view in practice. Sound ethical decision-making requires respectful, open exchange of views between and amongst all individuals with relevant ideas. And it goes on, and then it continues to discuss the whole business of the wholeness of character, as well as relating in the personal and also encompassing in the relationship of patients. So with that in mind, I then also looked into New York State as to what goes on here, and actually for drunk driving, yes, those misconducts would actually, it says off-duty misconduct related to drug and alcohol abuse and criminal charges related to assault and driving while intoxicated, by the licensee are often subjected to hefty fines, suspension, and/or termination of licensure. Although it did say in the preceding sentence there is no strict guideline to the off-duty misconduct, but it was very clear about the ones that I just read. So yeah. That was sort of an eye-opener. I had to say, okay, now that, but when I think back to school, I don't know, is that made as a very strong charge? I'm just throwing that out to both of you. I'm going back many, many years. I don't recall, or maybe I don't remember that was what was taught.
Well, he wasn't fired. He was put on probation by the Board of Nursing. So
So he still has his license. I know he hasn't had it revoked or suspended, so he still has it.
Right. And he can continue to practice, but this probation puts him on a status of any further violations or conduct problems could cause it to be revoked. And so it's not an over the top reaction. And I certainly think that we should be held to a higher standard in some regards. This is no different than businesses. I know nearby here in Delaware, the DuPont company is famous for its policy on safety. And that policy on safety carries over to the employees' home lives. Because the belief is if they are unsafe at home, then that is just a sign that they are being unsafe at work. So accidents that happen in the home can affect an employee's advancement in that company. And it really makes sense
for the kind of responsibility that we have. And, licensure is all about public safety. And I'm reminded that each time I, renew my license, I have license in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, they ask, have I been charged with or convicted of a felony or misdemeanor? And I think DUI is in there somewhere, one of those things. I don't proclaim to know the specifics, probably a misdemeanor versus a felony. I don't know. But the Board of Nursing needs to be, notified of that. So it's sort of rolled up in that public protection kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I also do feel that it is about our professional conduct does cross because it's about our image in the public and who we represent. And so I think that for the most part that you should really be maintaining a positive image on both the outside. Now, certainly people do, and I'll put in quotes, make mistakes, but I'm also taking this to the point that, wasn't that the person just got intoxicated, but also was caught intoxicated while driving. And there's been so much press on that heavily with regard to, again, the public safety arena and so many deaths that occur because of that type of thing. And, unfortunately, in this case, it didn't seem to be the case. It was just a DWI and doesn't sound as though anybody was injured. But, again, it's about that professional image that we portray as well as our responsibility to the public.
Well, the quote here in the article is from the court appeal was there's a logical connection between the professional fitness of a registered nurse and the alcohol-related misconduct. And that just pretty much says it all. There is a logical connection. That safety issue, like you said, Lori, we are licensed to operate safely as nurses, and we all know that we're nurses 24 hours a day. If the neighbor comes over and asks you a question because their baby's sick, you don't turn them away because you're not at work. We do this job because we care deeply about what it is we do. And, there are nurses, we are nurses all the time. And I think that's what that license means. I mean, it certainly means that we have to, we can have a private life, but it also means that we have to act responsibly when we are out of the workplace.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, we are a nurse through and through, and it's a 24/7 kind of thing. And also, I'm very happy to have the bar raised. I mean, we're different than, many other jobs. It is a profession, and we have a high standard, and I'm glad for that.
I brought up this before. Do you feel that this is being impressed upon, though, younger nurses that are coming out of school?
I think so. I really do. I mean, I'm probably the newest nurse here, And I will say, you know, what, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, it was certainly impressed upon me heavily. I know that, that the same group of instructors are teaching, still teaching classes of nurses from where I came from. And they all talk heavily about the responsibility of nursing and the history of nursing and the traditions of nursing. And I think that it's important to really continue to impress that upon the new nurses as they come through, because you're right, Teresa. It is something that we need to make sure is carried forward and continue to hold that bar higher. Because, you know, there's a reason we're among the most trusted professions. You know, this wouldn't have even been a news item if this guy had been a welder. You know, I mean, he wouldn't have, you know, nobody would have said you can't weld anymore. It would have been just, you know, it was a DWI, it would have been reported, and it would have been done. This is an issue because it was a nurse, because that is held up to a higher standard. And I think that this is, you know, this is something we need to continue to educate about. Lori, is your experience that new nurses are getting that?
You know, that's really a good question, Teresa. I teach in a, I have been teaching in an RN to BSN program. I'm now teaching in a graduate nursing program. And they all have courses that involve ethics. But I wonder if the whole professionalism legality connection is there. I'm not sure. You now, Teresa, I think you're involved with nurses coming into clinical practice. What are you seeing in the groups of nurses that are coming into employment?
Well, the ones that I see that coming into employment, this is something that I can't say that, you know, we talk about it, but we talk about ethics, but I think it's really more, again, we're really trying to grind them down more with the, you know, integration into the hospital world. But I don't recall, you know, I'm going to have to actually talk to, I'm on vacation, so I can't check that out now, but I'm really going to check it with the person who's in charge of all our orientees as far as the code of ethics in regard to what happens on the outside affecting your employment. I do know that if your actions will directly affect the institution, it could cause you to lose employment. So it depends on how it would reflect upon the institution.
And that brings us full circle back to that first story, you know, where it did affect the institution. People were posting on the institution's website complaining about this nurse. So clearly, you know, there can be a backlash. And that first article points out the public was horrified when a nurse acted inappropriately for what they saw as inappropriately. I think it was inappropriate too, but you know, this is the standard to which we are held. It's the reason we get the respect we get. It's because we've earned it. And if we cease to earn it, it's not going to be there anymore.
Right. I guess, you know, it's funny, as I think about this with the orientees and the younger set, I think pretty much to this age group, I guess I would say the 20 to 30-year-old group. And where I see that I guess there are certain social behaviors that are now considered more acceptable than others, yet they like to try to, I guess, find workarounds so that they don't get themselves in trouble. And I don't know that if, like I look at, let's say, for example, drinking, and granted, this is just totally in my own opinion, but I do think that it just seems as though there's a lot of it going on. And with as long as people are acting responsibly and not driving that car, then it's okay. And I just don't know what that says about anything else with regard to responsibilities.
Well, I know there's been a lot of questions, and this has come up in the past, and I've written an article about it on Nursing Show site about tattoos in nursing, because there was a couple of years ago a nursing school that basically had a zero tattoo policy. If it could be seen when you were wearing a standard set of scrubs, you were not allowed to be in their nursing program because they felt they had a responsibility to the hospitals in their region. It's the most commented on article on my site. And because people are passionate about body art, but you know, and everybody was on very polarized. They were either all for it or they were all against it. And then you talk to people. I got a lot of comments from nurses from other parts of the world who were like, "What's the big deal?" People like from New Zealand, where body art is you know, for some of them, a cultural thing. They would not be who they are if they didn't have somebody art. So it was interesting to see the response to that. But those are the kinds of things that I think are shifting and changing public views and awareness of things like that, piercings and tattoos and things like that. Let's move on and take a look. You know, I don't know if anyone watched much of the Olympics. I know, ladies, neither of the two of you watched the Olympics. But for my household, we put a firm rule whenever the Olympics are on that that's all that the kids are allowed to watch in the evenings is watch the Olympic coverage, because we see so many inspiring things. You know, the athletes that have overcome something to get where they are, or, you know, just pull ahead and win something when they had no chance to win it at the beginning of the race, according to all the experts, and just lots of inspiring things going on. But one thing I saw a lot of was kinesio tape, which I had never heard of before, never really seen in an athletic setting before until I saw the Olympics. And there were these athletes with these strips of thin or thick tape all over different parts of their body. Clearly to me, it looked like some kind of sports medicine tape, but it was in different colors and it was stretched out in different patterns, seemed to be trying to hold muscle groups together. I was thinking maybe it was for strains. So I looked up the information on this stuff, and I know you all did as well, but it was quite interesting to see that from a research standpoint, there isn't really any proven effectiveness of this tape for athletes. And Lori, you said that this was interesting because people are going to see the Olympics and come back in here and say, oh, I want to get some of that tape the next time I go out and play volleyball with my team, you know, because the Olympians are using it and I need that too because my knee's sore. You probably should be doing some physical therapy on that knee to strengthen it. The tape's not going to do anything for them, but they saw it on the Olympics, so now they want it.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the images now on the internet, and I'm thinking, hey, maybe I should try that on my knee. It's very powerful to see someone who you sort of automatically see as a role model. I mean, what better role model for sports people is an Olympian? And here they are all, you know, taped up in these. What it's like sort of tape tattoos here, Jamie. They got beautiful designs. I don't know if does the way you put it on do something. I don't know, but it's a powerful message there. The whole role modeling concept, and even though the evidence is not saying that they're effective, I imagine they're selling briskly. What does that say for us about other sort of healthcare treatments or pseudo treatments that are out there?
And how do we say, I think a lot of patients come in and say, I want this. And how do we as healthcare professionals tell them no? And people don't take that very well. And you know, I think this is one of the reasons why there's the issue with antibiotic resistant bacteria out there, because people came in for so long, just asked for a routine antibiotic prescription. And rather than just say to them, you have a virus, you don't have a bacteria, they would just get written a prescription for it. And this is no different from that in my book. I mean, the public is very, very much influenced by what they see or what they think they know is going on. And it's difficult for us to be that voice of reason to say, wait a minute, you should understand something. You're going to spend some money on this and it's not been proven to have any real effect.
Well, it even sounds from the articles that I've been reading that there's an entire industry that's worked around this now with people who actually apply the tapes to the sports people, and they go through training and they're able to put these to do the support or restriction of movements. So it's sort of interesting that this whole industry has just literally burst out there.
Yeah, I can imagine, certification programs for folks to put these kinesio tapes on in just the right locations and just the right amounts and all of that for, a variety of injuries or conditions that need to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important to point out there seems to be no negative effect. So if nothing else, you're right. It's just tape tattoos, right? I mean, it's just, you're the guy that has the Kinesio tape on when you show up on the community league field. And, so maybe you're better. I don't know. But I mean, I read the article here, a review of 10 research papers in the journal Sports Medicine this past February found that there was no clinical important result to support it for pain relief, no range of motion results. There was some outcome that might say that there was benefit to strengthening increasing strength. And it had some effects on muscle activity, but it wasn't certain whether that benefit was beneficial or harmful. It was inconsistent. So it's clear there needs to be some more research on this if they're going to continue to use it. But you're right. There's a whole industry that sprung up around this. And I've got to think after the Olympics, this is going to be the hot thing. Physical therapists and others are going to be asked about this tape. Will this help me?
Yeah, now I'm trying to read here, and maybe you guys have found it. They're talking about it relieving pain and reducing inflammation. Is it impregnated with anything, or is the pain relief and inflammation reduction and something with the lymph glands, movement of the lymphatic fluid, is that all based on its placement and the tension of the tape and all that? Do you know?
It doesn't.
That I'm not
and
really
that's,
sure of.
That's the that those are the claims from the website. Now, on the UK website that they quote in this article. However, right below that is the review from the journal Sports Medicine this past February. They reviewed 10 research papers on it and found there was no significant effect, positive or negative, using the tape. That they didn't find it had any benefit to pain. It didn't have any range or was inconsistent range of motion benefits. So these are claims made by an organization or a company that is selling a product.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm looking at the remarks at the bottom here. I'm reading this about a person who used it for lymphedema and says, I use Kinesio tape to help with my lymphedema. And yes, it does work. Lifts the skin, helps drain dramatically fluid, therefore reduces swelling associated with aching feelings. Been using it for years now. This is not new. I'm just reading this. I'm saying, but aren't there other – there have also been other methods for lymphedema for treatment as well as restriction around the arm or tension. So I guess people are finding other uses for this Kinesio tape?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it seems to me it's a lot like those back braces you see in a lot of workplaces that really don't do a whole lot but just, I think, make people more aware of their lifting posture.
That's a good point. And you made a good point earlier, I think you did, Jamie, that, it hasn't found to be negative. And unlike some unresearched or unsubstantiated treatments that can really hurt the person to use them, this sort of is in that same area of a lot of things that we do for, attempting to deal with that huge issue of, chronic pain or just pain generally. So maybe it's almost in that home remedy line. I don't know. It's probably hugely more expensive than a lot of these home remedies like heat and cold would be.
Well, I mean, I think, they're probably using this tape in conjunction with some of the tried and true methods of managing sports and athletes and their musculature and joints, the heat, the cold, the massage, all these things. And then, hey, yeah, put this tape on the next time you go out and play. I think there is some benefit to a placebo effect. And that's one of the things that is mentioned in this article.
Yeah, it's very true.
So anyway, we'll have to wait and see. Maybe when we get together, we'll all wear Kinesio tape when we get together at the at
well,
the
I
media
think it's
expo.
Coordinated.
Absolutely.
Well, tape me up. I think it's we'll have to have a party.
I'm not
going to
go there, Jamie.
I know. I can't even believe I said that. You know what? It's time to move on. I didn't think we'd get to this article, but I think it's time to move on. The Queen needs a nurse.
I'm very excited about this one.
The Queen needs a nurse. Well, I'm just going to tell you that I am so excited that they want a nurse in this position. This is an article about a medical appointment that is they're advertising for a holistic nurse for Windsor Castle. How cool is that?
You know, the only thing, though, that I found that was interesting about this when they were looking for the advertisement, it said that they wanted a nurse with acute care experience for 15 years, first aid and cardiopulmonary resuscitation skills, occupational health experience for 5 years, and possess a wide range of clinical nursing. Now, the one thing that if this was supposed to be a holistic nurse, I was really surprised that they didn't include anything about complementary or alternative medicine experience in that ad.
Well, you're right. You're right again, Teresa. Do you think this was probably written by some HR person or assistant who wasn't really sure even what holistic meant, let alone
I would tend to think that that was probably what happened.
Aren't we all supposed to be holistic in our approach to patient care?
Absolutely. And with all that experience, this part-time position is going to bring in a whopping $25,800 a year. So I'm thinking, are they underpaid in the UK or is just this position particularly underpaid?
Maybe. Yeah, I was actually curious as to what nurses make a year over in the UK after reading this.
Yeah, me too, because it didn't seem like a whole lot of money. And you know, I was trying to convert it to pounds. And then I was like, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, they've already done the conversion to dollars. And, you know, for a part-time position, it's not a whole lot. You know, usually, at least in here in the U.S., a lot of times the part-time positions that are the fill-ins, and they make a little bit more because they've got to be more flexible in their schedule.
But man, there's all those extra perks and benefits of being involved with the royal family. So I'm thinking they're going to probably have a good bit of applicants for this position. What do you think?
I would think so. I mean, it just caught my eye. It came across the United Press International stream, and I quickly saw that Queen Seeks Holistic Nurse. I still get bothered. Every time I read that, it just bothers me because it's like, holistic nurse, what are they really looking for here? And I agree with you. I think it was just some human resources individual, you know, got the word, look, we need a new nurse. The old nurse is leaving. So hire a new nurse. And they went out and just thought they'd look for something particular. It's nice to see that they think that holistic care is important, but again, aren't we all supposed to be holistic anyway?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Good story to end on, Jamie. Great story.
Well, I think it's just nice to see, you know, this is a workplace like any other workplace when you think about it. I mean, it is when they talk about the candidate, their duties will involve taking care of the royal household in Windsor Castle, guests at royal functions, and at times the royal family and residents. This really is a building that operates as a business in some respects. And there's going to be a multitude of duties. And many businesses have nurses there to manage the healthcare needs of the employees and the residents. And it's, you know, there's just nurses everywhere. And that's one of the things that impressed me about it was there are nurses in so many places. It's one of the benefits of being a nurse is the variety of ways you can engage in patient care.
Yep. It's a great profession.
Mm-hmm. So it's very, very, it just opens a door to so many different positions that people are not aware of. They tend to think of just in the hospital as opposed to businesses or as opposed to schools or education or any other area. There's just, to me, it's a versatile position that one can have, or I should say profession.
Well, I know I like it. I know you two like being nurses, Hopefully our listeners are enjoying this as well. And I hope we get a lot of comments back about this episode. We had some good conversations. Let's go ahead and wrap up. Lori, tell us a little bit about where people can find you online, how they can get in touch with you.
Well, my home base is correctionalnurse.net, all about correctional nursing news and views, professional nursing in that space. And we're talking this week about hand hygiene. How do you make that interesting, Jamie? I did my best, so you can find me there. Or Lori Shonley at Facebook or on Twitter.
You know, I just posted over on the Nursing Show Facebook page, I found a fun video that Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia.
Oh, I got that too. It's great. It's a great video,
Jamie. Isn't it great for hand washing?
Well, I'm going to have to go check this one out.
They like they took Beat It, you know, the Michael Jackson song Beat It, and they made a song called Wash It, and it was all about, you know, making sure you're hand washing. They got doctors and staff members and nurses and, you know, clerical
people. They're walking
people.
Down the hall to the beat. They're using their
they're washing,
you know,
they're
alcohol,
using, that's right,
hand hygiene sanitizers and sneak.
So yeah, there's some ways to teach hand hygiene out there.
Very true.
And Teresa, how about you? Where can folks find you online?
Oh, you can find me in a couple of places. I'm at Nurse Educator on Twitter. I also have a blog site, Nursing Staff Development Behind the Firewall. And you could also find me at nursinglogic.com.
Great. Well, I thank you both for joining us here. And we'll have to catch up with you again in a future episode. And I'm Jamie Davis. You can find me over at nursingshow.com and lots of other places under the handle PodMedic on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else on social media. And you will not find me making comments about traffic fatalities in those locations.
Not either, I hope.
No, I hope not.
Oh, I hope not.
If you want to get back in touch with us or check out the links to anything we talked about in this episode, that'll all be available for you over at insightsinnursing.com. And you can also always send your emails in to us. If you have a question for me or you'd like me to forward it on to Lori or Teresa, you can do that by just sending it in to insightsinnursing@gmail.com. And we'll look forward to hearing from you. We'll be back soon with another episode. And in the meantime, please, please remember to stay safe. And stay tuned here to Insights in Nursing.